You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Each day, tons of raw sewage drips from Mexico into the waters of Southern California. It's been a problem for years, so you'd think that something would have been done about it by now. Why hasn't it? Well, Scott Paltrow, senior special writer for The Wall Street Journal, has traced the complex backstory behind the big cleanup deal, and it leads to some unlikely people, including Vice President Dick Cheney. Mr. Paltrow's front page story appeared in the Journal on Monday, January 29th, and I'm very glad that he could join me today to discuss it further. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So how long has this been going on?
Well, it's been going on really for decades. If you want to sum up the problem in as few words as possible, the problem is that sewage rolls downhill. The city of Tijuana, Mexico, is at a higher elevation than just across the border in the California coastal area. It's surrounded by steep hillsides. The city has grown tremendously, and it's lured in people from all over Mexico and Central America who have, many of them, thousands and thousands, are living in squatter settlements that rise up the steep hillsides. And only about 40% of Tijuana's sewage is treated at all. The rest basically just goes out into the dirt roads and streets and flows downhill either into the Tijuana River, which then runs north across the border into California, or directly down canyons right into the Tijuana estuary.
So when Tijuana was smaller, the sewage plant was perfectly adequate? And now we have this other problem, or?
I think the history is that the sewage in Tijuana never kept up with the growing population, and that the population has grown exponentially just within the last decade or so, thanks first to the Maquiladora plants and then to the impact of NAFTA.
So it flows south. And
north, actually.
And the first town that it hits is San Diego, one of America's great cities, isn't it?
Well, it really hits a smaller city called Imperial Beach, which is just across the border, and also an important wildlife estuary, which is directly adjacent to the border.
And then is Imperial Beach an exclusive kind of area?
Well, actually, quite to the contrary. And the reason for that is, in fact, the sewage. It has basically pristine beaches. It is a famous surfing area. It was originally California's favorite surfing area going back a few decades, an area called the Tijuana Sloughs. And property
now it's
values,
the Tijuana Sleaze.
Yeah, well, something like that. And now property values are far lower than they are in beach communities anywhere else in California because the beaches are closed all the time.
Now, what about that wildlife reserve? I would assume that this sort of thing actually would help a wildlife reserve because it's a natural fertilizer.
The problem is that mixed in with the natural fertilizer is large amounts of detergents, battery acid, other toxic chemicals, and human diseases, high levels of hepatitis virus, E. coli bacteria. So
is this dangerous?
There are a lot of surfers who go in even though the beaches are closed, and they complain of getting sick frequently. There was just a very recent study measuring the levels of hepatitis virus in the ocean just off Imperial Beach, and it was found to be very high following the rains when the sewage is washed down. And so in that respect, it's dangerous, and it also, you know, impacts the economy there.
So if I were someone representing this area in Washington or the governor of California, I would go to Mexico and say, you know, you're going to have to build a new sewage treatment plant.
Right. Well, there are two reasons why the United States became involved in agreeing to deal with the problem itself. One, I think, was just purely pragmatism. Mexico has sewage problems all over the country, and while, you know, it's a relatively wealthy country now, oil resources, they can begin to do something about it. Politically, there's not much in it for them to spend money on solving a problem that affects the rich people north of the border.
Has there been much of an outcry from the people in Southern California?
Well, there's certainly been an outcry from the people along the beach. It affects not only Imperial Beach, but it does result in beach closures in Coronado and San Diego, and even sometimes as far north as northern San Diego County. And so there's been a lot of concern, and there's been a lawsuit by the state of California.
So you said the United States decided to take care of it itself. What do you do when sewage, raw sewage, is flowing towards your beaches? You put up a barrier?
Well, they did build a system of drains. In the summer, in the dry season, there's very little flow, and it's meant to catch the dry season flow, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But what the United States did was it planned to build a sewage treatment plant right across the border in San Ysidro, California. It did that, and then it initially only treated the sewage to a limited primary standard, which didn't meet Clean Water Act standards, but it expected to expand that to full secondary treatment. And as it was about to do that, certain members of Congress in Southern California abruptly put a stop to that.
My guest is Scott Paltrow, senior special writer for The Wall Street Journal and the author of How Politics Influenced a Big Cleanup Deal that appeared in the January 29th issue of The Wall Street Journal. So I wonder about you. You're based in New York. How did you first learn about this story?
Well, I have a sort of odd situation. I actually work for the Washington Bureau. I'm based here for family reasons. And I sort of have a very nice portfolio where I'm allowed to travel around a lot and find stories. And I was actually in Washington working on something on the Congressman Cunningham scandal and visited an organization called the Project on Government Oversight. And they said, well, while you're out there checking on that in San Diego, we heard of this Bahagwa situation. Why don't you take a look at that?
Bahagwa is the company.
The name of the company that ultimately got this contract.
So you said this thing was going to happen, and then there was it was brought to an abrupt stop. Why?
Right. What happened was the plant was going to expand and treat to secondary standards. All of a sudden, funds for that and any prospect of that was cut off. And the main influence were members of Congress from that area of California, particularly a Democrat, Bob Filner, whose district included the part of the area right across the border. The reason was that a startup company that hadn't existed before with two relatively unknown people behind it who had no experience treating sewage wanted to get a contract from the U.S. government to build a plant in Mexico and treat some of the sewage. And they made very large campaign contributions fit over the course of about 5 or 6 years to Mr. Filner, about $56,000. And there was also money to Duncan Hunter and Brian Bilbray. And in short order, they started to fight like crazy for this company, Bahagwa, to get a contract instead.
Who owns Bahagwa?
It's owned by six partners. The main partners are a guy by the name of Enrique Landa, who is from Mexico City. He's from a family of architects. He's an architect by trade himself, but lives in San Diego County and is an entrepreneur. And a guy by the name of Jim Simmons, who is a former San Marcos, California city councilman and a business consultant.
Well, obviously, they have a lot of money if they were throwing it around to get all of this support. And it worked. Well, I mean, this is the area where Duke Cunningham comes from. Aren't people, members of Congress, a bit more leery about doing this sort of thing nowadays as a result of what happened to him?
One would hope so. I don't know that quite yet we've seen evidence of it.
Well, normally for a project of this kind, how many bids would there be for building a treatment plant?
Well, I mean, as we know, contracting has mushroomed in this country, and unfortunately, a very large portion are going without bidding. And this turned out to be one of them. This company was given an exclusive contract to treat this sewage, special laws were actually written to benefit the company so it could do it.
What about their plan? As I understand it, it comes across to me as rather odd in that it would have water ricochet back and forth between Mexico and the United States.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, initially, all of the federal agencies involved, the EPA, arm of the State Department that was directly responsible for dealing with this, the Justice Department, and even the White House Office of OMB under Clinton opposed this because, among other things, they said it didn't make sense. You would have the same sewage, raw sewage, flowing to the plant in California, treated to primary standards, pumped back into Mexico to be treated to secondary standards, and then flow back once again into San Ysidro, California, to be pumped out into the ocean.
And were there any suggestions about how much this sort of thing would cost? It sounds like the most expensive way to treat sewage.
Right. It's vastly more expensive than the original plan to treat the sewage at that one plant in California. We still don't know what it actually would cost if it's built. The estimates range from between $580 million and $780 million.
How much money has gone to them so far?
Well, that's one of the very weird things. I mean, they have put up $20 million, supposedly, of their own money. No federal money has gone to them yet, and that's their claim to the benefit for the United States, that they would build it first and get paid later. And usually when the U.S. gives a contract, there by law has to be an appropriation. But this was engineered in such a way that they were allowed to get the contract without the money being appropriated.
So there's no money allocated to it in the budget that President Bush just sent to Congress?
The budget that just came out allocates only $3 million to it for 1 month's operation if it meets a series of deadlines, which now seem very unlikely that it will meet, although it claims that it will. And it also, surprisingly, included, I think, $70 million, if it falls through, to go ahead with the original plan and start building for secondary treatment in the United States.
So does that mean that this is much ado about nothing, that we're not going to – taxpayers' dollars aren't really going to go here unless they live up to their end of the deal?
Well, I mean, the point is if they live up to their end of the deal, they stand to get considerable built-in profits under their agreement and get paid their costs plus a significant percentage. It would be lucrative, and they also claim that they eventually would make money by selling reclaimed water to Mexico.
What kind of response did federal agencies have to this proposed project?
Well, that's where things got complicated, because the congressmen down there were very successful in pushing through legislation that favored this one company, but the federal agencies were dead set against it. And that's where the whole thing in around 2002 got blocked. And that's where Vice President Cheney and the White House Council of Economic Quality came in.
And we'll address that when we come back after we take a little break. My guest is Scott Paltrow, who is a senior special writer for the Wall Street Journal. His article, How Politics Influenced a Big Cleanup Deal, appeared in the Monday, January 29th issue of the Journal. This is WNYC. We're back with Scott Paltrow, who's a senior special writer for the Wall Street Journal, and we're talking about an article he wrote, How Politics Influenced a Big Cleanup Deal, that appeared in the Journal a week ago from today, last week on Monday. So you heard about this. Did you start calling people at the company at Bahagua?
I did early on. As I mentioned, I was actually out in San Diego working on the Duke Cunningham story, and I took advantage of that trip to visit Imperial Beach, some of the people who are concerned about the sewage flowing in. And on the next trip, I did visit with the Bahagua people.
And were they open with you?
Well, there was a large group of them that met with me. They spent a lot of time. They answered all of my questions. I think there were some doubts raised about the accuracy of everything they said, and particularly in terms of what they claimed already to have nailed down and achieved.
And then you started checking out the money trail. How long does that take in a deal like this?
Well, the money trail is essentially campaign contributions and lobbying fees. And that's a relatively brief portion of it because everything these days is online.
Yeah, but we have Dick Cheney getting involved. He's not from Southern California. I can't imagine that he has much of a connection to any of this.
Right. Well, what happened, as best we can piece together, is that somehow the two principals of Bahagua attended a very private, exclusive fundraiser that Cheney was at in Roswell, New Mexico in 2002. He was there to back local congressional candidates. And at that exclusive meeting with just about a dozen or so people, Bahagwa made a presentation to him, and for some reason, apparently he took it seriously. As best we can piece together, the person who helped mediate that was Congressman Duncan Hunter, Republican of Southern California, who, by the way, is an announced presidential candidate. And we noted that 2 days after the meeting with Cheney, Mr. Hunter received two contributions of $1,000 each from relatives of Enrique Landa, one of the principals of Bahagwa.
There are also lobbyists involved who may have broken the law, as I understand them, because lobbying rules forbid a former lawmaker to try to influence members of Congress for a year after leaving office.
Right. Well, one of the congressmen who has been quite involved with this is a Republican named Brian Bilbray, also from that same region down there. He actually lost his bid for reelection in, I think it was 2002, and he went to work for I may be mixed up on the date, but anyway, he then went to work as a lobbyist, essentially, on behalf of Bahagwa. And less than a year after leaving Congress, he testified before a House committee that was looking at the progress of Bahagwa and never mentioned that he was lobbying on their behalf and also apparently violated at least House rules, although he denies it because it was less than a year after leaving office. He then was reelected this year to Congress, taking the seat that had been vacated by Duke Cunningham, who, of course, is now in federal prison.
Just barely won it, but he did win it. Did the people in the area, were they aware of the fact that he was supporting Bahagwa's bid here?
I think in the mix of things that people were concerned about in that election, it figured it was a very small figure. I think they were more concerned about immigration, and it's a very Republican, that district is a very heavily Republican area, and that weighed more.
So when did the White House start pressing federal agencies to support Bahagwa?
Well, it was in the months just after that 2002 meeting with Cheney. Somehow one of the Bahagwa people got another meeting in Cheney's offices, and pretty soon the Council on Economic Quality, which is basically the White House arm that dictates to the other agencies federal environmental policy, got heavily involved, held some meetings, and all of a sudden all of the opposition that had been so strong from these federal agencies vanished.
You quote the International Boundary and Water Commission Commissioner Arturo Duran, who said that he had reservations because, quoting, "it's not normal to sole source to accompany a contract for hundreds of millions of dollars. It's now not how the federal government operates." Did he then cave in after the pressure was applied?
Yeah. I mean, he admitted that he caved in, that the pressure was severe, and he felt he had no choice.
So you said that Bahagwa has not been meeting its deadlines. How far behind is it?
Well, it's very difficult to know because actually very little information has been disclosed. But I spoke with Mexican officials who are dealing with this and who cast a lot of doubts, and also the current commissioner of the IBWC, the Boundary Water Commission that deals with this. And basically they said they've seen no firm commitment for financing, which Bahagwa was supposed to have lined up and claims that it in fact has, that Bahagwa was required by now to have acquired land where to build the plant. And not only hasn't it acquired the land, but apparently there won't be any land to purchase. The Mexican government is considering leasing government land to it, but that's still way up in the air, even though Bahagwa claims that's nailed down. Another vital thing is that Bahagwa needs permits from the state of California to discharge the sewage, and they've been turned down. They're appealing it, but now they're way past the deadline for having done that.
And why has California turned them down?
California has turned them down for a variety of reasons, among others, because the arm of the government, the IBWC, that's supposed to be backing this, hasn't stood up for it. And instead it's Bahagwa that has had to deal all by itself with the state of California.
To some degree, doesn't their plan really just involve messing around with this water for a while and then having it go out into the deeper Pacific?
Well, I mean, the plan is that they would, in fact, treat it to a greater standard that would meet U.S. Clean Water Act standards. And also, their plan includes taking an additional 34 million gallons of sewage from Tijuana and treating that as well. So, you know, if the plan was carried out, there would be cleaner sewage. The issue, I think, the biggest issue really for the people down there is that even if that's done, it won't solve the main problem of pollution.
You said that the commissioner has been replaced. As I understand it, a lot of the people at the IBWC who opposed it have been fired since.
Well, there were actually several other things going on at this agency, which is a whole other interesting story I don't think you want to get into on this show today. But there were also other reasons why people were moved aside there. But yes, those who had strongly opposed the Bahagua plan were moved to other jobs or to less pleasant job sites, and all of the opposition vanished.
And this is something that we've been hearing about regularly in Washington, people who oppose something that the White House wants wind up being disappeared because they're just not doing their jobs well enough. At least that's the argument given when they're fired.
Right, or not towing the line that the White House wants them to follow.
So I've heard that you've said the story is a lot longer and you had to cut things out. Why is that?
Well, that's inevitably the case with a newspaper. There's a limited amount of space. Also, I think I found it to be such an interesting story that I perhaps overreported it and spent a fascinating amount of time in the slums in Tijuana and also talking to the surfers and the environmentalists in the estuary. And by the way, one of the things that I found out in terms of what this plant would achieve or not achieve is that even if it exists, it's not going to stop the problem of raw sewage flowing down from these vast squatter neighborhoods directly into Southern California.
Could this money simply go into building a plant in Tijuana? I'm sure the Mexican government would be thrilled to have somebody come there and do it for them.
Well, Tijuana, under its city's master plan, actually had plans to build its own additional sewage plants. And it stopped because all of a sudden there was this company with U.S. money that was willing to do it for them, supposedly. And so their plans, which could have been carried out by now, have just been put on hold, as have the U.S.'s plans on the other side of the border to expand treatment.
Now, we're in New York. What is the relevance of this story for us, other than this is where our tax dollars will ultimately be going?
Well, I think it shows a number of things, one of which is issues about federal contracting and also how projects that are in the public interest can be hijacked and directed, it seems, to benefit private interests.
Well, there's a possibility that this thing will drag on longer and then we'll have somebody else in the White House and who knows what. But this still stands to cost us a fair amount of money.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we're going to have to do something about this problem. The longer, obviously, we wait, the more it's going to cost. The costs have already gone up for building additional treatment on the U.S. side of the border. And meanwhile, the damage caused by the sewage, is piling up.
Should I assume that similar stories are happening around the country and we're just not finding out about them, at least not yet?
I think we're starting to find out about them. I think there's a greater look at federal contracting. But I think, you know, the U.S. government is relying so much on private contractors now, there are so many no-bid contracts that it's a significant problem. Also, Tijuana is not the only city along the border that's contributing to this. There's a great problem just across the border from the New River, which flows into the Salton Sea in Southern California. All along the border, these communities are growing tremendously because of NAFTA, and no one knows what to do with the sewage.
Now, we just read that tons of money in dollar bills were shipped to Iraq. And nobody seems to know where that money went. What's happened to the Republican Party? Wasn't it the party of fiscal responsibility?
Well, that was the reputation that it had. I don't know that what happened is specifically attributable to the Republican Party. I think it resulted from poor planning in advance by the White House and just an almost panicked response to trying to keep the government running there.
Although you also point out that in the case of this story, a powerful Democratic congressman was also involved.
Right. It was a bipartisan effort.
Scott J. Paltrow is a senior special writer for The Wall Street Journal. He has won many of the top journalism awards, the George Polk Award, the Gerald Loeb Award, the John Hancock Award, Los Angeles Times Editorial Award, and many others. And he wrote a story for The Wall Street Journal this past Monday, a week from today, called How Politics Influenced a Big Cleanup Deal. And we will be continuing to follow the story. I hope we can have you back when we find out whether any of this stuff has been cleaned up in the near future.
Be a pleasure. Thank you.